This is an interview with Nadine Yoneko Dozeno by Clark Hansen from the Oregon Historical Society. The date is 2298, and this is tape 12, side 1. You were talking about Mr. Dozeno then.
He wanted to learn the English language, and so he started going to the English classes in the evenings. Mm-hmm. And he went there for several weeks, and he stopped going. And we never knew why, and I would ask him why, and he said, well, he didn't want to go anymore. And later, he mentioned to me that there was a Mrs. Abe, Issei lady, who was also in the same class. Mm-hmm. And when Mrs. McGill, who was the instructor, would always take roll call, she would go down the names, and she would call Mrs. Abe, Mrs. Abe. And when it came to my husband, she would call him Asazo, Dozono. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that greatly offended him. Mm-hmm. And he didn't tell me that till later, because he didn't realize that that was another custom over here, that she tried to make it easier for people to think that they use their first names, and the women had the misses, but the misters didn't.
Right, right.
And she didn't know that, and she always asked us, she said, why isn't your husband coming? But at that time, I didn't know. But when he explained that to me, I was working at two different jobs, and when I was working for foreign-born students at the Girls' Poly in the evenings, mm-hmm. after I worked for the school district, one of the things that I told the teachers, that story, they appreciated it because she said, this is something that we didn't know and we should have known, that the people don't like to be called their first names. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference of customs in Japan.
You had also mentioned about customs regarding, and I think this was off tape, when you would be walking with him.
Yes.
That in Japan, he would be walking in front, and,
right.
and you would be walking behind.
Right.
But then over here, it changed.
Right. But it actually didn't change, but he started to have a slight sense of humor, and he would say, well, now that we're in America, I guess I have to walk three steps behind you, which he never did. But gradually he was really becoming much more Americanized. But mm-hmm. at first it was very hard for him to get accustomed to the people over here. Another instance would be when Keiko had her friends over here, and they would get into our car, and my husband would take them someplace. Mm-hmm. I would always ask him, I said, Daddy, open the door for the girls and let them get in before you go in. And he said, no, why should I? You know, because it was beneath him. And that's just another custom. But at the very end, he did. Mm-hmm. And when we started to go out to these different functions, I would whisper to him and I would say, Daddy, help me with my coat, you know, and he would do that, or he would open the door for me. But on the side, like in Shakespeare, he would say, this is only doing it out here, but I don't do it at home.
Now, was he serious or trying to be humorous?
Well, he was serious, and also he was trying to be funny, but he was trying to tell me that you stay in your place. I'm just doing this for the American people.
Oh, that must have made you feel good.
It made me feel good that he was beginning. Oh, yes. There are different instances where he really became much more Americanized, and it made me feel very happy. And I think even if he had sort of a sour look on his face, he was being humorous. Mm-hmm. After the children left, he helped me with the dishes. And that was very unusual. Very unusual. And I would say, Daddy, you don't have to do the dishes. And he said, well, this is for exercise. But he was helping me. And we had lots of visitors all the time. And we would use the Japanese dishes, you know, which meant a lot of dishwasher, because I don't have a dishwasher.
Ah.
And he would help me, and I would say, well, I wouldn't be able to have all these visitors, you know, and have people over if it wasn't for your help. And he'd say, ah, so kayu means, oh, is that so? But it made him feel good.
Mm-hmm.
But to the very end, he was very stoic, a very Japanese person. And another funny instance that I'd like to tell is that after the children were gone and we would sit here, just the two of us on the sofa there and watch television, I would reach over and take his hand, and he would just kind of turn away and take his hand away. And I said, Daddy, I said, no one's watching us, you know, what's wrong? And he would just look over and he would have kind of a funny look on his face. True Japanese to the very end.
Mm-hmm.
And one time I said, mm-hmm, I'm surprised we even had children. And he would laugh. He would laugh. But he was very stoic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, your children come over to America, and here it is, the 1950s, and there's rock and roll and Elvis Presley and...
That came later, though.
That came a little later,
oh, yeah,
didn't it?
Yeah.
Did they participate in those kinds of things, though?
To a certain extent, but I think they were... They didn't get into the rowdy group.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were very studious. But Robert graduated as president of his class at Benson, and Keiko graduated with honors. And Sho, when he was at Cleveland, he was the president of the Boys Junior League that they had started. So they're all very active in their classes.
Uh-huh.
But Sho especially, when they were going to Buckman, they both, the two boys, loved to swim. And we, from the house that we had rented by Stark Street, we had moved over into this house. And he had to change from Buckman over to Hosford. And he was very unhappy about that because he was very popular at school, and he loved the teacher that was teaching him at that time, and he didn't want to move. And I had talked to one of the administrators at school district, and I asked if we could have special attention in the fact that Sho did not want to move from the one school to the other, because at that time you had to go to the school that you in the district that you lived in.
Oh yeah.
And they gave me permission, and I remember so well that when I came home, Sho met me close to Washington High School on the bicycle. And I was surprised, and I said, well, what are you doing here? And he said, well, he wanted to tell me something. And so we got his bicycle into the car, and he came back, and he said, Mom, they've chosen me as vice president of his class over at Hosford. And so that made him feel that he was one of them again, and so he never made any trouble at that time.
He must have been able to adapt very quickly to be much, so easily accepted.
Much more than the others.
So you didn't worry then about your children then?
Well, I worried in that Robert and Sho both were on the wrestling teams. And I was not able to participate in going to those different activities because I was working all the time.
Uh-huh.
And that made me feel bad, but we always went to the PTA meetings. And I remember that the teachers always said that the parents who didn't need to be here were the parents who came, and the parents who needed to know more about the children were absent. And so that always made us feel good. But the three children were very good in school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm. And Keiko, when she was in at Washington High School, they had programs about Japan Night and different things like that, and we participated. And I had letters from the principal in that we participate in dressing children in the kimono. And even at that time, in the early 50s, many of the schools did not know too much about Japan or the Japanese customs. So throughout the years, over 20 years, I've always gone to the different grade schools and some of the junior high schools to teach origami and the tea ceremony and the customs of Japan. And I felt always felt very good about that.
So taking a look at the Nikkei community and what was going on then after the war, how were the lives of the Nisei different than their parents before them?
Excuse me. In my opinion, I think that the Niseis saw the sufferings of their parents, and so they were very obedient, and they took care of their parents to the nth degree, even whether there were instances when it was hard for them to do that. And that goes back to the fact that their parents came directly from Japan, and that was most of the people came during the Meiji era where things had changed, and it was Japan was not modernized, and so they brought over to America the old Japanese customs, and the Niseis had retained that custom of observing New Year's, or some of them observed the emperor's birthday, not being disloyal to America, but to the fact that this was a custom that their parents had had.
Right.
So when it came to the third generation, I think the Niseis went almost overboard trying to protect their children and trying to make them become more Americanized. And since they had the benefits of being more exposed to the American public and not being discriminated against, they had the advantage of being more integrated into the American society. And some of the parents might have gone overboard in trying to give their children too much.
Isn't it a difficult situation, though, trying to have your children understand and preserve the traditions of their culture, and yet fully assimilate into their environment, into their society?
This goes back to the Remembrance Day that happened in 1990? Anyway.
Yes.
When the Niseis awakened up to the fact that they had to let their children know what had been going on. And this was when they started to speak out and talk about their experiences in the relocation camps and how they were treated, and being American citizens, they were treated as Japanese nationals. And this goes back to the fact that they have the the Memorial Park in Portland and the different exhibits that they had at the Oregon Historical Society that never would have happened except for the fact that the Niseis realized that it was time for them to speak out and to let their children and the public know what had happened.
Right.
When I went to some of the schools to talk about Japan and the customs and origami, even the teachers did not know what had happened. They were really surprised when I mentioned that I didn't have to go into the relocation camps, but my parents did, and they were shocked. They said that this was part of the history that they did not know, and so they should know about it.
What happened to the Nikkei professions, the farms and the businesses and whatnot after World War II and their integration back into society? Were they able to pick up where they left off, or did they have to start over?
Many had to start over. And many of the people who had lived in Portland had moved out after the relocation camps, mm-hmm. and they didn't come back until the Remembrance Day when they decided that it was time for them to celebrate. And it was a big thing at that time.
Hmm. And then how was your life changing after you came back here?
I was fortunate, very fortunate. All my life I have been blessed with many friends, many influential friends. The fact that I worked for school district was a blessing. I started out in payroll, and then I went as a secretary to the assistant business manager. And from there, when I retired, I took early retirement. And when I retired, I had my own office and took care of all the state industrial accident business for the whole school district number one. And during that time, when I was the assistant business, the secretary to the assistant business manager, he was a very wonderful employer. And realizing where I had come from, he always let me take time off when I was asked to do interpreting. And I was doing a lot of interpreting. I made up my time. But during that time, I interpreted a lot for FBI people and for the customs office. And for, it would be immigration mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And I had many interesting stories to tell about that. One story is that there was a Japanese seaman who had jumped ship, and he was sick. And they thought he was a mental case, but they weren't sure. But they had to go through his background. And they had him in the Holiday Park Center at that time. And there was a part of that. It's no longer there. The Holiday Park mm-hmm. Hospital has been changed over onto, I think, Emmanuel.
Yes.
Part of Emmanuel. And I was asked to interpret, and so we went through, when I look at some of the TV scenes, we had to go through several different parts of the hospital where there were barred doors. Mm-hmm. We went into this room, and this young, very nice-looking, clean-cut Japanese seaman was lying on the bed. And I went over there, and I tried to make him at ease and talk to him in Japanese, and then when we had to interrogate him, one of the questions was, who was your father? And this was after a long series of questions, and I said, who is your father? And he looked at me, and he smiled, and he said, my father is Clark Gable, and he lives in California. And so the interrogator was saying, thank you very much. We understand that he is a mental case. And so they had to treat him as a mental case. And I had never forgotten that, because up to then he was giving us the correct answers and we thought he was doing fine. It was just the fact that no one could understand what he was talking about because he was talking Japanese.
Right.
But when I went in there and he said his father was Clark Gable, then we knew that he was a mental case.
So what happened to him then?
They had to send him back to Japan after uh-huh. they treated him.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
There were never any follow-ups. I was just hired as an interpreter, so.
Right, right. Well, what kind of activities were you involved in outside of your work?
I was involved with the Vrida Nisei Women's Club.
I think you had mentioned before this was the...
probably the 10th time that I've been president, but it's not by popularity, it's by...
You said this is called the Wise Women's group?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It comes from the Greek word, Vrida means wise women.
And what did they do?
They were a social group, but they were one of the first clubs in Portland to give out the scholarships to the Japanese students who graduate from high school.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And do they still do that?
They still do that. Hmm. But at the time when it started, it started before the war, and then after the war, It was affiliated with the YWCA, and we always had an American advisor. And we had our club meetings at the YWCA until it got to the point where there were probably 75 members. Mm. But as the children grew up, and the mothers no longer had to be at home, then they started to go out to bowling and to play golf with their husbands, and so they no longer were members of the club. And so it dwindled down to the point where we felt that we should disband from the YWCA and have our own meetings at our members' homes. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did, and that's what we still do mm-hmm. now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you're still functioning.
We're still functioning, and mm-hmm. and next year is going to be our 50th anniversary.
Oh, boy. Are you going to do anything special for that?
We hope to.
Well, what about your involvement with the Epworth Methodist Church?
The whole family was involved with the Methodist Church, mm-hmm. and the children were baptized, and my husband was also baptized.
I was just going to ask you, your husband was baptized too. So, how did this come about?
Well, he read the Bible, and there were old members of the church who were friends of my family, and although my parents were Buddhists, they were still friends from way back, and because of my husband's background, and because he came from Japan and he had news of Japan, the people from the church would come over to the house and he would do a lot of translation or help with the weekly or the monthly papers that came out from the church. Mm-hmm. And so he became very much interested, and we always had a Japanese minister there. And so actually, he almost became more faithful to the church than I did.
Really?
Really? He would go. Yes.
As a religious activity or as a social activity?
It's more or less both. Mm-hmm. You have to have a lot of social activities in order to get the people to go to church. You know.
Right.
And when we were first there, we were not allowed to dance. It was the Buddhist people had dancing and bingo like the Catholic churches, but the Methodist people were much stricter, mm-hmm. and they were not allowed to dance or have bingo because it was gambling and that sort of thing. But mm-hmm. as the years went by, we became more social. Mm-hmm. But by when we were here, there was more of a religious more than social.
Now, how did his professional life evolve? I think you just had said that he was with the consulate for 20 years?
20 years.
And then why did he leave? Was that for retirement then?
Oh, retirement. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. He worked there longer than the normal person. He worked till he was 72, and I think normally he would have been like 75. Mm-hmm.
And
he was always happy to go to the emperor's birthday or to mingle in with the different associations. And I remember I would go with him, but he would leave me and make his rounds, socializing with other people, and I would be standing there with a 7-Up in my hand. But things have changed. We were very properly dressed at that time, and now, with the different, I'm still invited to the different social activities connected with the consulate, but dress is different altogether from the olden days.
Now, he retired when he was 72, and that would have been what year?
1976.
And what did he do then upon retirement? Did he have any particular goals or?
Well, he was a golf bug.
Golf.
I used to tell him that I'm a golf widow, and I had to explain what that meant to him. But he was greatly involved in golf, uh-huh. and he was also involved in the Japanese Ancestral Society group.
What was he doing for them?
He was a member.
Uh-huh.
Socializing.
And did he Was he involved with any activities, any particular activities that they had? The Ancestral Society?
Well, they had, well, members played golf and that sort of thing. He did a lot of reading. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But most of his life went around golf. Mm-hmm. And we did quite a bit of traveling. You know, one of our first trips was we went to Europe and
Now, why did you decide to go to Europe as opposed to going back to Japan? I know you went back to Japan eventually.
Oh, yes. We went back several times to Japan together.
Mm-hmm. But why did you go to Europe first?
Well, we went to Japan first.
Oh, you went to Japan first.
But we wanted to see the world.
Yeah.
So we took a trip, a long trip to Europe and saw all the 12 different countries in 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And we also went to the Far East. We were invited by a Rotary Club. Hmm. Excuse me.
So your husband was in Rotary then?
No, he was not. Ah. No. But George Alzamano was in the Rotary, and we were invited to go along with him. Mm-hmm. And so we went through Sri Lanka and Kuala Lumpur and Singapore.
Hmm. How wonderful.
It was great. Most of the time it was odd because I would like to try the different foods in the different countries, but mm-hmm. he was more of a meat and potato man. And that's interesting. Although wherever he went, we always tried to find a Japanese restaurant. Uh-huh.
Did he adapt to American food pretty well?
Very much so. Huh. But for every evening meal, he had to have rice. And we always laughed about that because the children were getting older and they were having children, and we'd have Thanksgiving, Christmas meal, but he always had to have rice. Mm-hmm.
So what were your children doing then? I mean, as they got older, they went through, they all went to university?
Keiko went to university for 1 year, but she wanted to get married and start her life. And she married George mm-hmm. Nakata.
And Robert?
His background was after he graduated from Benson, he went to Oregon State and went in for engineering and architect, and he discovered that art was the love of his life. And then he went, after his sophomore year, he decided he wanted to go into the Army, and so he was in Germany for 3 years. He came back and then finished his studies at University of Oregon in art. Mm-hmm. And then he went to Pratt Institute and got his master's.
Hmm. Did he specialize in a certain field of art?
It was everything.
It was everything.
Right. And now he's also affiliated with the Blackfish Gallery. So.
And Sho was... How did his life evolve then?
Sho was also very active at Cleveland High School, and he was almost too popular. He had so many friends, and he decided that he didn't want to go to University of Oregon where a lot of his friends were. And so one of the administrators at school district wanted him very much to go to administrators wanted him to go to Amherst, but he, I think, wanted to stay closer to home, and so he went to University of Washington.
But he wanted to be at a school away from all these other people.
Right,
that he knew.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. And he would always bring his friends back with him. And, of course, I remember since he was a baby of the family, I felt that I was at a loss. And my sister always told me, she said, there's a time and place for everything. And with the last one leaving the nest, you'll probably find more different interests to help you along. And mm-hmm. I've always remembered what she said. Mm-hmm. But she used to bring a lot of his friends over and some of it, mostly Caucasian friends. And he would come without notice a lot of times, but it would be on a Friday and stay until Sunday. And some of his friends would say, well, are you sure it's okay? And Joe always said, it's just another plate for Mom. That always made me feel good, because we always had a lot of his friends over at the house instead of they going over to other people's houses. Mm-hmm. And Joe was more of a socialite. He still is. But we had friends here that I would make sukiyaki for them, and I still meet them periodically, and they'll say, gosh, Mrs. Dozono,